They say when a baby is born, so is a mother. But while you are there to help your baby grow into the person he or she is meant to be, who is there to help you? Many women feel lost and alone when they become mothers, wondering, who am I now? Sometimes it feels like the transformation from woman to mother is as radical as a caterpillar's transformation into a butterfly. Did you know that inside the chrysalis, the caterpillar literally turns into goop before it rearranges itself into a butterfly? This podcast is about the goop, what soul transformation looks like as you transition from being a woman to a mom. Your baby's growth matters, but yours does too. You're not alone. I'm your host, Brittany Ming. Welcome to the Motherhood Metamorphosis. Welcome everyone to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. I'm your host, Brittany Ming, and today we're talking to Kelly Cervantes. Kelly is an award-winning writer, speaker, and advocate best known for her blog Inch Stones and debut book Normal Broken, the grief companion for when it's time to heal, but you're not sure if you want to. She has been published in the Chicago Tribune, Cosmopolitan, and Fortune, as well as featured on MSNBC, New York Times, and CNN. Born and raised in the Midwest, Kelly resides in Maplewood, New Jersey, with her husband, Miguel Cervantes, and their children and dogs, Tabasco and Sriracha. I love Tabasco and Sriracha. That's so cute.
Tabasco is currently at my feet, and Sriracha will hopefully not bother us.
My little one's in the living room, and she usually always visits, so there's always usually a blooper at the end of my daughter coming in. But I actually had shut the bedroom door, and my dog was whining because she likes to come and lay on my bed. So I opened the door, and she's laying on my bed, so hopefully she won't be whining anymore. Well, Kelly, welcome. I'm so thankful that you're coming on the podcast, and I'm so excited to talk to you today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
So we have actually met in person twice, which is kind of rare because a lot of the people that I interview, I know them, but I have never met them. But we actually have met twice, and I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, it was amazing getting to know you over the So God Made a Mother launch party in Omaha, and then again in St. Louis. You were so kind to show up to my book tour.
Yeah, so we were both published in Her View from Home, So God Made a Mother, and we met at a launch party in Omaha, Nebraska last April. And then Kelly was actually just on her book tour for Normal Broken, and they happened to stop in St. Louis, which is so near to me. And it was at the coolest bookstore. Did you get a chance to explore that bookstore at all?
I didn't. I wish I would have, because everyone keeps telling me how incredible it is.
Yeah. So if you're ever back in the Midwest, it was just a neat bookstore. It had like books and gifts and just like cool little things. My husband actually went Christmas
novel
shopping
neighbor,
there.
For anyone who's
novel neighbor. Yes.
Give them a little plug.
Yes. So my husband went Christmas shopping there, and without telling me, I'm like, why didn't you take me?
That's amazing.
So we need to go back for a date. But I would love to talk about your daughter, Adelaide, today, and how loving her and being her mom has shaped you as both a woman and a mom.
Oh, absolutely. There are a few things I like to talk about more than Adelaide. So Adelaide is my second child, and I thought I had like had a good handle on parenting with my son, Jackson. I mean, he was your typical like kid. He was three when Adelaide was born, and I remember the nurse telling me just after she was born that she was floppy. And I remember thinking that all babies are floppy and they can't hold their heads up. So what are you talking about? Several months later, Adelaide would be diagnosed with low muscle tone. She was having trouble eating. She would have her first seizure at 7 months. And a few months after that, she would be diagnosed with infantile spasms, which is a particularly devastating form of pediatric epilepsy. Now, while we were starting to get these diagnoses, I was still working full time. I was a career woman. I bought my family's house exclusively on my income. I loved being a working mom. I mean, it was hard, but I loved my job. I worked for a Tom Colicchio restaurant, coordinating and selling events, overseeing a team, meeting sales quotas like a boss. And then it was my last day working for Tom's group, and I was supposed to start with a new restaurant group as their director of sales the following week. It was a huge move in my career. And that day, my husband calls to tell me that he's booked the lead role of Hamilton in Hamilton the musical. And he's going to do it in New York in the summer. We were living in New Jersey, just outside of New York at the time. And then we were going to be moving to Chicago because he was going to open the production in Chicago. And days before, Adelaide had been diagnosed with epilepsy. And quite literally, overnight, with one phone call, I went from being our family's breadwinner, boss woman, to a stay-at-home mom slash caregiver slash nurse slash pharmacist, managing our daughter's care and figuring out our move to Chicago. And it was a struggle to adjust. I mean, I want to say it took me like a year to grieve my career. And looking back now, there is no job in my life that will ever be more rewarding than being Adelaide's caregiver. But at the time, I felt isolated. I felt like this change in my identity had happened to me. It didn't feel like a choice I had made. I felt like I had no control. And it was, I got really depressed for a while.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It was a huge change, and it wasn't something that you chose. You didn't choose for your daughter to get sick. I mean, I'm sure you were fully supportive of your husband's career, but also, who could have anticipated that he would have gotten this lead role that would have a move in there? And I can resonate with that with you in saying that, of course, it would have been hard for you to adjust. I think, the primary audience for this podcast is new moms. And I think that sometimes that can come as a shock, especially if you have been in a relationship for a while, you've planned your pregnancy, and then you decide with your partner that you are going to be the stay-at-home parent. So sometimes, even if we have that choice, it can still feel like a shock to go from being social all day long, having goals, to just being at the stay-at-home parent where you aren't interacting with any adult all day long, just this small child. And you had additional needs on top of that with your this new diagnosis and caring for your medically complex daughter.
Yeah, it was a learning curve to be sure. And it was also hard because Miguel and I had always co-parented, specifically with Jackson. We really did share a lot of the parenting needs. And I mean, honestly, Miguel was home more than I was before he booked the role. So all of a sudden it all fell to me. And I remember we got in this fight and I so mad at him. I had gone out to like get my nails done or something, and Adelaide needed a medication while I was gone, but I hadn't reminded him about it. I was like, he should know what her medication schedule is. And I came back and I found out that she hadn't gotten the med, and I was furious. And Miguel was like, well, you have to tell me. I'm not on top of her medications the way that you are. I don't have all of this memorized the way that you do. And it was this sort of awakening moment for me where I came to the realization that like I was really in, while Miguel and I made medical decisions for her together, the day-to-day care really had to fall on my shoulders exclusively. Otherwise, we ran the risk of her not getting a med, or her getting the med twice, or not knowing who was responsible for calling the insurance company for the 40th time. And so it really did have to sit on my shoulders, and that was really hard for me to accept. And then once I sort of understood, though, that this was now my role, it was incredibly empowering. I started doing tons of research and learning everything that I could about her condition. I would sit it with like a window with a like research white paper on one side of my computer screen, and on the other, I would have Google open where I was like Googling every other word because I got my worst grade in human physiology in high school. And I got to the point where I joke, I say I had a PhD in Adelaide. No one knew her better than me. I could go toe to toe with the doctors. The nurses often thought I had a medical background. And I was really proud of that. I was really proud of the person, of the mother that I became. I became the mother that Adelaide needed. which was a much different mother than what Jackson needed. But it was so empowering and rewarding, and I loved it. It was a double-edged sword, though, because even sometimes the doctors would be like, "Well, you know her best. What do you think?" And I'd be like, "Well, but I'm not the one with the medical degree." And there were times where I just wanted someone to tell me what we needed to do. And because all of her various conditions and symptoms were so complicated, there wasn't like a straightforward medical plan. We were constantly shifting, and but I loved caring for her. I loved being her mom and being her voice, because she was non-mobile, she was non-verbal, but that did not mean that she couldn't communicate. She had no issue slapping her brother across the face when he was squeezing her too hard. She had no issue screaming when she didn't like the song that was playing and she wanted you to change the song. She had no issue telling me that she did not want her oxygen in her nose anymore and would pull it out. So she certainly had ways to communicate, and I loved being that sort of interpreter for her, who could help people understand her and teach them about her and all of her feistiness.
I want to pause the narrative really quick, and I wonder if you could tell us a few of her favorite things, like her favorite song or food or a stuffy. Like, can you tell us a little bit about her favorite things?
Yes. Oh, I'd love to. So she absolutely loved Frank Sinatra. We learned that she hated traditional children's songs like Baby Shark, anything with like a pop upbeat, like hated them. She would kick, she would scream, and then the second you put on like jazz or Frank Sinatra, she would like still and calm and open her eyes. So she had very good taste in music.
Of course she did. Just look at her parents.
She loved to cuddle right up until the moment that she didn't. And she'd be like, "Get off me." And she'd like be squirming and kicking. She thought her brother was hysterical. He loved to play this game where he put like a whoopee cushion on a chair and he'd be walking down the hall and sit down on the chair, pretending unsuspectingly. And the, whoopee cushion would fart. And she thought that was great. That she, I have videos of her just laughing. She loved horseback riding, which seems very sort of bizarre, but horseback riding is, we did it as part of her therapy. And it was, I think the motion was really, really calming for her, that sort of sensory input and maybe being with the horse, with another animal. She absolutely loved that. And it was fun to see her come alive around other animals.
So I like hearing about how she loved horses. That's special. I can see her in my mind riding the horse and loving that. So yeah, could you tell us more about your journey with her and how the infantile spasms progressed with her?
So we never really had more than 3 months of seizure freedom. The seizures really racked her life. We started adding more diagnoses: dysautonomia, mast cell activation syndrome. I mean, just like a laundry list of all of these things I had never even heard of prior to Adelaide being born. We were getting constant scans, tests. We never had, during her life, we never had a diagnosis for her, an overarching cause of why this was happening, which was incredibly frustrating, because how do you treat something when you don't know what it is? And then we had two MRIs done within several months of each other, and it showed that her brain was deteriorating. Whatever was causing all of this was neurodegenerative. And at that point, there's just nothing science can do at this point. We have no way, whether it is, ALS or Alzheimer's or any sort of neurodegenerative condition, we can't stop it.
How old was she when you got that news?
She was 3 and a half,
Okay.
and I still hoped that we had months, or that we had years left with her, which was sort of naive, I think, but I was in denial. We made it through the summer of 2019, and we could see that she was rapidly deteriorating. She was growing more and more uncomfortable. It was harder for her to breathe. And we called in hospice services at the end of the summer, and she passed away on October 12th, 2019, just a few days before her fourth birthday. And it was just as devastating as you can imagine. I had tried, we knew that she was dying, and I just wanted to spend every moment with her. And I had tried to imagine what life was going to be like without her, but I just couldn't even wrap my head around what that looked like, because every moment of every part of my day revolved around her.
Yeah, she was your whole life.
She was my entire life. I woke up and it was getting her meds. It was taking her to therapies. It was talking to doctors, counting seizures. And then at night, I was up with her several times during the night when her alarms would go off because she wasn't breathing and I had to resuscitate. I mean, it was just constant. My entire world revolved around her. I became an epilepsy advocate, fundraising for Cure Epilepsy, a nonprofit organization. I joined their board. I mean, everything that I did outside of Jackson and Miguel, my entire life was her. And then overnight she was gone, and I woke up the next morning and I didn't have to get meds. I didn't have a doctor to call. And I think some people would think that maybe that was a relief, that that was a release of a burden in some way, but it was the opposite. I felt like I had been forced into retirement from a job that I loved. I wanted nothing more than to have to clean syringes out. I wanted nothing more than to text her doctor about another medication change. And that wasn't something that I could do.
Yeah. And those actions would mean that she was still with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was I don't think that people entirely understand that when you lose someone, be it a child, a parent, a friend, a spouse, you don't just grieve the person, you grieve the person that you were with them. You grieve that relationship. You grieve all the ways that they touched your life. You grieve the relationships of the people that they brought into your life. I adored her doctors, our nurses. We had a nurse who was in our home 40 hours a week helping me take care of her. And she essentially became a part of our family for almost 2 years. And then she just wasn't coming to our house anymore. There's just all of these threads of someone's life that ties you to them. And of course, I miss cuddling her and I miss doing her hair and kissing her and her smell, but it's so much more than that. It's all of these other pieces that you grieve when you lose someone like this.
That's really insightful. And I really appreciate you bringing that up, because their caregiving roles are, you know, we think of mothers and we think of children, but there's so many other caregiving roles too, like people who are caring for their parents and people who are caring for their grandparents, or maybe a sibling who needs support and help. And you're right. Like, when that person passes away, you do lose a whole network of people though in your lives. That's part of an additional grieving process. So I really thank you for bringing that up. I think that's something that people don't see. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that, because it's not just the loss of the person. It's a loss of identity, a loss of your daily routine, a loss of relationships and comfort and familiarity of what's going to come the next day. What's tomorrow? Because you didn't know what is the next day. What's the next step?
Yeah. Yeah. It's complicated. And then you have to figure out who you are all over again. I had to figure out who I was once I wasn't working anymore and I was Adelaide's caregiver. And now all of a sudden I had to figure out who I was without her physically in my life. She'll always be with me in so many ways, but without her physical presence in my life. And that was a whole journey in and of itself. My grief took over my life. I probably was not an incredible mother to my son Jackson for several months, if not that first year. I tried really hard when I could, but I was grieving and I was depressed, and I'm eternally grateful to my husband. We grieved very differently, which is a whole other thing. But so when Adelaide died, he felt relief for her and for him that she wasn't suffering anymore. He would say that all he ever wanted while she was alive was that she wasn't suffering.
Hmm.
And we hoped that we could find the medication or the treatment or a surgery or something that could end that suffering. But that wasn't to be. The thing that ended her suffering was the end of her life. And mm-hmm. he finally felt relief in that mm-hmm. way. I didn't process. I think that's beautiful. And I think that's lovely. And I don't think that I could ever do that. I just felt sorrow and grief and anger and all of the things. But because of the way that he processed his grief, he was able to be there for our son and sort of step in and take a greater load of that parenting while I was essentially disabled. Mm-hmm. And I'm eternally grateful to him for that. He never tried to force me to rush through my grief. And I was appreciative of that. And then I had started my blog while Adelaide was alive, in Stones, writing about being a medically complex parent. And then after she died, I still enjoyed writing. So I just started writing about my grief and connecting with other people through that context. And it was incredibly cathartic and healing to get these ambiguous, terrifying thoughts out of my mind and onto a computer screen where they could be rationalized and be less emotional and still be harsh, but still be true to me and hopefully help other people and help me connect to other people and feel less alone. And so the writing just sort of started to take over as like my main therapeutic outlet, and my book Normal Broken was really born out of that. And so now I've had this like additional metamorphosis, and it's it's really, I will never be the same person that I was when Adelaide was alive. I'll never be the woman I was before she was born. And sometimes I come up to friends that they don't quite understand why I'm not the same person I was before. They remember a different Kelly than who I am now. I'd rather have my daughter back. I'd rather have her never have been sick in the way that she was. But I do think that this version of Kelly is pretty freaking awesome. She's mm-hmm. strong and resilient. She's empathic. She's a much better writer than those other ones. And I'm grateful for that, for all of these growth opportunities and all of these changes in my life that brought me to the woman and the mother and back to a career again that I love and enjoy and is rewarding and keeps me connected to Adelaide in a forever way.
Yeah. I wonder if you could tell us, you can dig in deeper to your subtitle of your book. You say, the grief companion for when it's time to heal, but you're not sure that you want to.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like that's so honest, and I think it can apply to so many different areas of life. You're like, I know I need to move on from this, or I know I need to accept, or I need to let go, or I need to like move in a direction, but you're just like, oh, I just want to like dig in my heels. I'm not sure I want to move forward. So yeah. Can you talk to us about how that is manifested in your book?
Absolutely. So my mother is a therapist, and after Adelaide died, she sent me stacks and stacks of books. And I would get through like the foreword or the first chapter or two, and then I closed them and never reopened them. And my issue was that they all assumed that I wanted to heal. They came from this overly clinical or overly religious or overly something. But no matter what, they all made this assumption that I was ready to heal. And the fact of the matter was, I didn't want to. I, at the root of it, I don't think I understood what healing was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought healing meant, like you said, letting go, moving on, getting over it. And that was just about the most ludicrous thing I had ever heard, because I was never moving on from my daughter. I was never letting go of her. I was never going to forget her. And what I came to understand, I think we have a you know, we keep hearing these days, you know, grief and love are two sides of the same coin. So just as I am never going to stop loving my daughter, I will never stop grieving her. And healing doesn't mean that you stop grieving. It doesn't mean that you forget, that you let go. And that sort of, it came to this realization. There was, the night before President Biden was inaugurated, he gave a speech. It was a COVID-19 memorial. Now, regardless of your political affiliation, here is a man who understands grief. He's lost a wife, an infant child, and an adult child. And he's standing there at that lectern and he says, to heal, we must remember.
Mm.
And I felt like someone had just like pushed me back on the couch or something. I was like, wait, to heal means remembering? And that it was such an incredible realization for me to hear that healing didn't mean I had to let go of her or forget her. Healing meant that I got to keep her with me forever. It meant learning how to move forward with my daughter, with my grief, with that love. That was what I had to learn how to do. That is how I was going to heal. That is how I was going to allow joy back into my life, mm-hmm. to experience happiness again in my life. And I could do that. I could heal if it meant that I got to hold on to Adelaide forever and ever. And so it was just this giant, major shift in perspective that allowed me to make the choice to heal, because it is 100% a choice that you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
Take that first step forward to like leave your warm and cozy grief cocoon and take those steps out into the world to start processing that grief and tearing it apart piece by piece and understanding it and making the choice to move forward with your grief and joy.
That's really good. I love that he said it was about remembering, because sometimes I think we think I have to forget everything that happened before in order to move forward. Like somehow, I don't know. I feel like that's a real eye opener. He also reminded me of something that I don't know what I was grieving about. I've had a lot of big grief moments in my life. Like when I had a miscarriage and my son was diagnosed with autism, I went through a lot of grief of grieving what I thought our story would look like.
Absolutely.
Grieving just the way I thought, you know, our time in England would go when I got pregnant unexpectedly. That was going to completely shift everything that I thought our overseas assignment would be. And I remember my husband, he was very gracious, but he told me, he's like, Brittany, I don't want you to love your grief more than you love like our life. And that really, really stuck with me it gave me a lot to think about, because I did love my grief. I loved it and I wanted to stay in it because somehow it justified my pain. And when I could justify my pain, I could really see that what I was going through was hard, and somehow that made it more real for me. But also, like, you can dig down deep in that place and be like, this is better than the real life that's around me or the love that is still in my life. And I like that. I think that, you know, creating these word pictures and these metaphors can help us so much to understand what's going on inside of us. And I think that the word picture of remembering in order to heal, I think that's one that listeners are really going to take with them throughout this podcast or beyond. I wonder if you could tell us some specific ways that you remember Adelaide and bring her with you in your life every day.
Absolutely. So there's certain things like her anniversaries, like we throw a birthday party for her every year. On the anniversary of her passing, which just is a generally crappy day, but we go to a sunflower field and pick sunflowers, and it's just something to get outside and to do and to feel close to nature, which then feels close to her. We have pictures of her all over our house. We talk about her regularly. We have a wind chime on our back deck that someone gave to us after she passed away. And after she passed away, we ended up adopting, and our new daughter, I told her that the wind chime was Adelaide saying hi to us. So every time we walk outside and the wind chime is going, she says, "Hi, Adelaide." And she never met her, but she knows that it's her sister. And it's just this really sweet way. She's like, "Mommy, Adelaide is saying hi to us." And I'm like, yep, she sure is. Hi, Adelaide. We love you. And, you know, so there's these sweet little ways that I can always feel her with us. Ladybugs are her symbol. Her name, Adelaide, I used to call her my Adelaide bug. So I have a ladybug tattoo. I have a ladybug necklace. I'm actually currently wearing a ladybug sweater.
Yes, I noticed your sweater is ladybug.
I'm not usually this ladybugged out, but today I was feeling a need to be extra close to her. And so all of those symbols and reminders, it helps. And honestly, this book, being able to share the book and talk to you and talk to other people, I get to keep her alive and her memory alive every time I'm sharing about this book, because I get to talk about her. And regardless, every parent loves to talk about their children, and it doesn't matter whether they are physically with us or not. We still love to talk about our kiddos.
Yes, I hope that, I think our culture is getting a lot better about this. I think of previous generations, even my mom's generation. My mom had a full term stillborn baby, and she can't talk about it. It's very, very hard for her. And I think that in people sharing their stories more, I think it gives permission to others to say it's okay. And to bring out that grief that maybe they've been tucking very close and loving very dearly, and saying, "Hey, I want to bring my child into this narrative. I want to tell about this baby or a pregnancy that you went through that didn't end with a live child in your arms." Those stories matter a lot, because it has shaped the person, who they are. It shapes them as a woman. It shapes them as a mother. And it shapes the future you that is coming forth. So I think that bringing those stories out can bring so much healing. So thank you for doing that and for talking about this. You know, when we were at the book signing at the bookstore, I told my husband this afterwards, because they said, "Does anybody have any questions?" And I didn't have a question, but I wanted to raise my hand, and I'll tell you what I wanted to say. I wanted to say, Kelly, thank you for talking about this, because not everybody can. Because not everybody has the words to speak out their grief. That's what's in their heart. And I think that sometimes there are writers and people in the world who can express what people have in their hearts, but they just can't say out loud. And so I think that you telling your story is so important, because not everybody has the words to express. So thank you for your story, and thank you for your writing your book. I think it's going to be such an important addition to people's grieving and giving them permission to heal when it's time.
Thank you so much, Brittany. Thank you so much for saying that and for giving me a place to share my story and to continue to share Adelaide. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah. So I wanted to end our time with this question. I'm proud of myself for, and it can be anything big or, you know, something that happened yesterday.
I am proud of myself for not yelling at my daughter this morning when she wouldn't get dressed. I really wanted to. I'm also proud of myself for not giving up on getting this book published. It's not, I know, Brittany, you know very well how hard it is to get something published and how many no's you have to hear. And I'm really proud of myself for not giving up and getting it out there, because I do think it's important. And I'm really proud of that.
I love both of those. Because I think not yelling at your kid when you really want to and they're incredibly frustrating is a huge win. So good job. And your book, I hope people check it out. I'll definitely be linking it in the show notes. And it has risen to the top. Brag on yourself a little bit. Tell us like what has happened with it.
Well, it's a USA Today bestseller. It continues to do pretty well on Amazon, and my publisher, it was one of their top selling books of the fall. So I'm really excited, and you have to keep the momentum going. But it's, so the hustle is real, but it's fun.
For sure. Where can we find you online, Kelly?
Absolutely. So I am on Instagram and Facebook at KellyGC411, or you can just search Kelly Cervantes and I will come up, and also on Substack. And the book is available everywhere. Books are sold, Amazon, Bookshop, your local bookstore. You can request it from your local library. And the audiobook is also available everywhere.
And you recorded the audiobook, right?
I did. It's me. You get to hear me read it, which I hope is fun.
Yes, I love that. Well, thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Oh, thank you so much, Brittany.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. I hoped you enjoyed this conversation and it gave you some good food for thought. If you haven't ever done so, could you hop over to Apple Podcasts on your phone, scroll down, and leave a review? Leaving a review really, really helps boost the podcast visibility in Apple Podcasts, and it encourages me to keep going. It also helps other people find the show. And if you're like me and you are looking for a new podcast, you read reviews and you figure out, hey, is this something that I want to spend my time on? So leaving a review really helps in all those ways. Next, if you'd like to support the podcast financially, I'd encourage you to go to Buy Me a Coffee. You can find the link in the show notes or on the Facebook page, the Motherhood Metamorphosis Podcast. And you can leave a small donation. These help cover the monthly costs and also help cover my time for producing this. There's also some really fun freebies in the shop on Buy Me a Coffee, some art that I've created, and some mental health resources for kids that I would like to share with you. There's also the opportunity to talk with me if you'd like to schedule a virtual coffee and chat. I would love to hear your story, to listen, to hear you, and to give you encouragement in your motherhood journey. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope you join us next time. Oh, I love that. And I love horses are so curious about kids. I think that I just watched a video on Instagram about all these horses coming over to meet babies and like sniffing them in the face. And we actually, I might delete this, but I'll just tell this story. When our twins were babies, they were preemies. And so they were very tiny, but we took them to Florida when they were like 3 months old. And a family member had horses and we were just walking around with the babies outside. And the horses came from all the way across the paddock to meet the babies. They specifically saw them and they like wanted to sniff them and look at them. And I was like, you know what? I think adult animals are just as curious about baby humans as we are about baby animals. And I thought that was like the cutest thing.
Right. Horses are incredible emotional creatures. Yeah. They're amazing.
I was wondering if you could tell us some specific...